Good morning, everyone. Today is Tuesday, March 20th, 2018, and it's 9 a.m., and we're gathered in the BCC conference room for a general discussion. President, our Commissioner Simon Hare and Commissioner Dan DeYoung.
Julie, I might be wrong.
And this morning, we're going to start out with So Ready updates. Colleen Padilla.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. And Julie Seltzer are at the table today with us.
And I wasn't sure what that the rest of your collection in the office there.
All righty. And just for the audience, Mr. Petrorek, you're up for as item number three, but I'm going to move you up to following their presentation so that you can get on your way before we get into BCC update projects. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you both today?
We're doing very well.
So I've got a packet of information. I'm sorry if the staples are kind of wonky. I'll leave one for Lily, she should come in. So I just wanted to bring you an update on some things, of course. First of all, thank you for your grace extended to me. I was supposed to be here in December, and my dad passed away, so some time has gone forth before I've been able to come back and see you. So thank you for all that you do.
Sorry for your loss.
Thank you very much. So what I thought I would do is just share some general information. First of all, in this top sheet is just about an upcoming event we have in Ashland. One of the events that will move around from year to year, and it's really focused on how does community attract tech talent, tech companies. It's also about how do we build an ecosystem for entrepreneurs. And then there's a third speaker. There's three keynote speakers coming in for this from all over the country. The third keynote speaker will talk about advanced prototyping for manufacturers. It's a need for both manufacturers and startup companies. So this is just a little overview of what that is on top.
Now, when you have the technical side of it, do they ahead of time tell us what they need that we don't supply, like, for instance, broadband on this side of Blackwell Hill or so on and so forth?
The speaker who's coming in works in the tech industry. She's really kind of a site consultant, and I've heard her speak before. She's coming from Phoenix. She's talking about what communities should do in the way of having amenities and assets that will attract tech workers. So broadband, of course, would be something that would be important to.
Right, but are they talking about attracting, meaning like the social aspect of, we have Shakespeare in the Valley. Is it things like that that attract them?
Yeah.
We have a ski lodge 42
amenities,
miles from here.
Coffee shops, breweries, the things that typically attract tech workers, high-tech workers. So that's what that's about.
Because I know one of the things in Grants Pass there for a long time, that people, kids don't come back here. It's because there was no nightlife. Now we've got, downtown is starting to vitalize with the hall.
Yeah.
OPPA, I think that's what, is that?
The Port Authority.
Yeah, the Oregon Port Authority. And things of that sort that keep young people, so something to do after work.
Right, right.
And in the evening and on weekends, all the events that are going on in Josephine County and
those are all good things.
Those are all good things. And I was just wondering if that was part of the
matrix. So there's an argument
that,
you go out and find the workers and then you build the amenities. But her argument is that you first create all these amenities so that you do have something that's attractive for the workers.
Well, I have a friend of mine from San Francisco, and she's the president of the Golden Gate Street Rod. She came here to buy a truck from me one time, and they've been back over and over and over and over again because we didn't even know Grants Pass was there because it doesn't show from the freeway. Once we made the turn on 6th Street, she went, what is this?
Yeah. Well, good.
They
sounds
absolutely
like you guys
had no idea.
Things happening.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'm not going to go verbatim through all this stuff.
The
next full page is just from our last board meeting, my executive report that has other data in it. I want to say thank you for your continuation of grants that fund the EDGE program. And there is a next iteration of that I will talk about right now. What we're going to do with those is we have developed a digitized game for high school students. And I don't know that you've heard me talk about this yet.
Yeah.
It's going into a beta test in September. And what we're trying to do with all those EDGE profiles now, there's over 45 of them actually on our website, trying to inform high school students in our region that we have all these great companies that they don't know about. So we've created a game that will be digital game on a web platform that is a hybrid of a Great American Race and a scavenger hunt, where these students will have to go through and read those profiles and learn about all the companies in our region to find the clues that we have already established some questions. And then they advance through different components of the game. And one of the final components is where they actually create a two-minute video of a company that they've been assigned, right? And the way they win this is actually by the number of likes they get on Facebook and the number of shares, so that the high school students, you know, it goes beyond the high school students to the community, the parents, because we have so many great companies that nobody knows about, right? And there are opportunities. It isn't that you have to go to college necessarily for some of these. You could just go into the trades for many of these jobs. So it's to raise awareness of these companies. It's going to go into a beta test. We have a local company creating the web platform for it. They happen to be using computer science students at Grants Pass High School to help them. They're also providing them a real scenario project to work on with them as a job shadow internship. We went to Grants Pass High School to present this idea about a year ago, actually. Told them what we wanted to do, and they suggested doing a beta test first. So we've scaled it down. There's about 10 or 12 companies in this beta test. Again, it's a gamified version. We call it So Ready Quest. And at the end, they'll do a video, and then they'll have an event in which they present, and it's for scholarships. Okay, so the top three teams will get scholarships.
Now, the teams, are the teams from different schools?
Yes, sir. Okay. So, you know, our original vision is to have all 15 or so high schools in our entire region participating in this. But we scaled it down for a beta test that has four schools involved. It's Grants Pass High School, it is North and South Medford, and it's Eagle Point. So we met with the superintendents of those schools and said, we really just need a class to run through this to see if it's interesting, does it have their attention, does it serve our purpose of raising awareness of all these companies. And we asked, you know, we just want a class. And they came back and they said, actually, we want our entire sophomore class to do this. So in the fall, the sophomore class, the at least half of it for the first semester of those four high schools, that's about 1,000 students, will be doing this beta test where they'll be giving some questions. It's all automatic on web-based format, so they will have to literally go through and read all these profiles to answer the questions. And they keep getting down until there's finally an event and a video.
Kind of a Jeopardy thing.
It's sort of like a Jeopardy. We had an intern from Whitman College in Walla Walla who helped us develop out the questions. And this is the beta test. We've spoken to all the businesses about this. They're very engaged. They look forward to it. This meets a need that they have. Is like they want to know, where will our future workforce come from? So we're trying to do our side of it by informing the public that all these companies exist. So right now there's 45 of them or so on our website. And it literally, the students will have to search through all those profiles to get to the clues. Okay?
Okay.
So that's coming up, and that's just the next iteration of how we use these profiles and this information so that we continue to promote the local companies. I don't have all the data in this.
You have a list somewhere of your companies? You said there's 45 companies?
There's 45 on the website. I can tell you which companies currently in Josephine County are Edge Profiles. It's All Care Health, which I brought you one. That's one of our newest ones. Carries of Oregon, of course, sadly, is no longer here. Duralast, which is one of the newer ones. Mm-hmm. Dutch Bros, Hellgate. Hunter Communications has a location here. Lynx Technologies out in Merlin. Marzi Sinks, Met One, Oregon Swiss Precision, Rogue Wilderness Adventures, Sotar, Taylor Sausage, Thomas Hospitality, and Zipline Gear. Those are all profiles in this region.
Okay, now I'm going to glance at that.
Yep.
And I see Tim there for Duralast Roofing because he's been there all along. But nowhere on there do I see in large numbers Duralast Roofing. I can look at the Changing Healthcare Network for Southern Oregon, but then I have to look for the word All Care.
Right. These are just posters in your packet.
Okay.
It's the two. This is just for decoration for you as a reminder. Those are on our website with the full story.
Okay.
So the
but I think his point is well taken. I've struggled sometimes. Mm-hmm. We are in the forest, so we know that when I look at the picture of Chuck Taylor, it's Taylor sausage or Carrie's or whatever. Mm-hmm. But we're not marketing to each other. We're not marketing to us. We're marketing to people who have no idea what we're talking about. And it frustrates me. I see it in ads all the time, and I'm not an ad person. I have designed dozens, not 100. You should look at it and look away and say, what was I supposed to take from that? Mm-hmm. Did I get it?
Yeah.
Nope. That's key. That's the first thing I learned.
On that, I would physically have to stop and read it, and I don't know if I would give it that amount of time.
Yeah.
But to me, you know, like Duralast Roofing, you know, if I was not, and even All Care, you know, nice building, all the employees and stuff, but I've got to really go down to the small print. Duralast has made it impressive. And
who does these?
Yeah, it just
Paradox Media Group is our ad, I mean, our agency. These are not designed to be ads. These are stories that we share
okay.
with outside companies who want to know who's here.
I don't
want
to nitpick it, but examples of like changing healthcare to work for Southern Oregon. No, it's healthcare working for Southern Oregon. You know, it just the fewest number of words you could possibly use to try to convey the phrase that you're doing. That's maybe I've been watching too much Mad Men.
Mm-hmm. I don't ever want to. I'm famous for micromanaging, but I would rather say All Care Health up there, and then as a tagline, changing healthcare to work for Southern Oregon, because that's who's doing it is All Care. It's just my own thing.
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Colleen?
Well, I have to trust that the agency is, you know...
Yeah, doing their job.
Doing their job, and I'll take that into account and let them know.
But that's just, you know, for me glancing at that, I thought, well, I if I didn't know Tim, because I know him personally, I'd have to read Duralast on the rolls of roofing and then go down and read the text. So that's all.
Okay.
Tim's been hard and out there for years.
Again, thank you for your input and helping fund these so that we can do that next iteration of questions.
Oh, we help fund them?
45. Do we need any more? I mean, our whole goal was to express the fact that there's a portfolio of like companies out mm-hmm. there to people who are looking to relocate here. Mm-hmm. And back to your first thing, the number one amenity that brings somebody here, TechForce or anywhere else, it's the job, first off. So before you're recruiting an employee, you have to recruit the company to come here, right? So that for me is like my brother-in-law works down in the Bay Area, and he's worked at Tesla, he's worked at SpaceX, he's worked at Google, he's worked at Facebook, and he just put out his own shingle for a new company. He doesn't need a job to be here. He'll move his company here when he feels mm-hmm. like it, and his employees will come mm-hmm. because of the job that they're in. So that's the first thing. I mean, we are number 7th in the state, Josephine County, for livability. And those are the elements that mm-hmm. probably go underneath that. But for me, the tech person isn't going to move here because there's a brewery on every corner or whatever if there isn't a job here first.
But
so
his company.
Goes back to what...
And actually, that's probably the intel that we have from consultants is it's just the reverse, actually. They're looking at the new workforce, perhaps your... brother-in-law or whomever it was, is really looking for livability and what's available to him. And then
that's the owner of the company, right? Mm-hmm. Not the, I mean, if we had no tech jobs here, who's moving here as a techie and just going to put out a shingle? I struggle with that. There's mm-hmm. nothing for an employee to do, but the owner of the company, Robert, he'll move here when he gets fed up with traffic. And mm-hmm. yeah. the schools aren't meeting his needs or whatever. He doesn't like the lifestyle down there. He doesn't like the lifestyle
right.
down there.
Right.
But I guess the other side of that is to go to your point is he wouldn't move up here because he couldn't get the employees that he needs. So
yeah.
He
there's
would move
so many
his business
different
tomorrow.
Factors in all of this. I would encourage you or Julie or someone to come and hear what the consultant has to say about that and what
I struggle sometimes with consultants is there are people who used to be in the industry 10 years ago and they're not living it right now. I mean, hopefully they're talking to people like my brother-in-law who is working hand in glove with, mm-hmm. with Elon
Site
Musk.
Site consultants? They work specifically for companies that are looking for the next location.
The company's looking for the next location. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily the employees. They want it, but they're sometimes happy with the job where they are. I don't know. Has to move is what my point is.
It's like tires on your pickup. One size isn't going to fit all because they're noisy if you want to get out in the mud. Mm-hmm. But if you want a high, quiet tire, then you're not going to go in the mud. But I think what they're trying to do here is to showcase a reason for the company to relocate here, bringing the job opportunities with them.
This started out as a business attraction uh-huh. campaign and has many other purposes now, just raising awareness that we have existing companies in this region that offer great jobs, and now we're trying to make that connection among our high school students.
Right.
And that's the quest.
Because I think one of the things that I've always heard in the last 8 years I've been involved in this stuff is that there is nothing for kids to do here once they get out of high school
and go to school.
They're not going to come back here because there isn't the job marketplace for them. My daughter, for instance, she graduated from college, and my wife was just crushed that she wasn't going to move back to Grants Pass and get a job. Well, her job leaving Oregon State University was the restaurant manager at the Disneyland Hotel. There's no Disneyland hotels and nothing of that caliber here at all, right. other than maybe a maitre d' down at Tap Rock or something.
No, it's
Club.
Shakespeare. It's stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that we have here, and maybe that's what we're showcasing.
Well, we have a stat out there that comes to the Employment Department. There's over 400 manufacturers in our region, and 60% of them have fewer than 20 employees. So most people don't know them because they don't have a billboard like MasterBrand may have or Harry and David. That's one of the points that we see in promoting some of these companies is to raise awareness. And then now we have a different set of posters related to this that are in all the high schools and at Rogue Community College, where it will say, and the one that comes to my mind right now is Boise Cascade has one that says, these are the type of careers available at Boise Cascade, and they're in the high schools and RCC, so that students say, wait a minute, I'm kind of interested in that, and they can find out what the career pathway is. This started out again.
Yes, I remember.
To share with outside companies who want to know who's here and why. And it's had different iterations now, and we're trying to answer where will the new workforce come for our existing companies.
So back to what I was saying before somehow I got derailed. We've done 45 of these. What is the next step? What's the next phase? What's the next campaign? What's the next thing you're going to want funding in? Because I don't know how many of these that... How many do you need?
Yeah, we have. We will have to
express what you guys expected to do it.
Yeah, if there's some other key companies, there's a few more that we still want in there because they're significant. MasterBrand is one of the next ones, for example. The next iteration of this that helps us is rolling out the Quest initiative, which requires us to create a platform that's automated. Requires us to have interaction with high school students and scholarships. And so your assistance with that helps with the Quest program. But do we need a ton
more?
That would
be nice, is that we see what we're doing, taking this thing in a multi-year approach of any campaign should have that. So it doesn't just die. And you don't have to get everything. You know, MasterBrand's probably already captured in the portfolio of manufacturers to express to the outside, we have that like component here. Well, it's just like this. So, you know, from the sales standpoint, you know, we don't need everything, in my opinion.
Nope.
And so, but I want to know what's next, because we have that, you know, $10,000 we've been appropriating for year. But there should be something else coming up next year, and then the year after that, and they all dovetail together, and they build on each other.
So we're building with it with Quest right now.
So the other one is that. My idea is that you got to sell the business owner to come here. And we had a proposal 2 years ago, 3 years ago, of some guy who was going to do that van something. What are we doing with that concept of trying to recruit companies who are finding the footprint is too expensive down there? What you can buy up here for $3 a square foot is $10 a square foot down there. Mm-hmm. That sort of idea that you know, entrepreneurs can start up and move up here because we have the workforce. We're developing it. It's coming out of our colleges, OIT or whatever. capabilities here, making it all come together. But I feel like there was a real valid argument in trying to recruit the business owner to relocate.
We still do some business relocation. We attend trade shows. We have a lead generation firm that looks for companies in a specific category. It's outdoor products. It's manufacturing. The things that fit our region, because we have the workforce that would do that.
Right.
So we have a lead generation firm. We pay about $2,000 a lead. We have a contract with them to do 6 leads a year. And we pay that lead when we actually have a conference call with them and talk to them. And then our next goal is to have them come visit our region. We do the FAM tours.
Yep.
You've been on one of those. And we try our best to go visit them if they really are close to making some kind of decision.
They don't have time to go.
Yeah. So a few weeks ago, end of February, I was at the Heli Expo show, for example, in Las Vegas with our airport director. We have a new airport director in Jackson County.
I haven't met him yet.
He also hired a lead generation firm, and we had 4 appointments with aerospace companies. And I went with him because he's new to our region, so that he would have someone to provide background. So we do some targeted efforts like that. That shotgun approach where you're just going after anyone is not effective use of anyone's dollars.
Right, I agree.
Right, so we respond to leads still. We have several leads that you'll see here in the packet that are pretty close to buying property in Jackson County. We can talk about why there soon. But we only have so much bandwidth, and we have to be able to respond to them in a timely way. So between the lead generation and a few targeted trade shows and responding. And if you talk to site consultants, there's only a number of companies that are going to move in any given year anyway. So
when
you look at the whole nation, maybe we might get one or two of those. So
well, and everybody's in that market.
Everybody's trying to
They're all trying to recruit business. Boise, Idaho. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a tough sell there because there's,
there's
tons of people going there.
Yeah, but if you're not at
the
table, if you're not on the list, nobody's going to come.
Yeah, so we're working on that. And the truth out there right now is that everyone's struggling with workforce. So unless we have the workforce prepared to go to work for some of these companies, you know,
How did In-N-Out shape up? Because they were struggling with finding a workforce to even go to work for In-N-Out.
I don't know. We don't do retail, so I don't know what the outcome was there.
I think they ended up paying like $12 or $15 an hour.
Well, they started out at $12 or $13 an hour anyway.
Yeah, it was a pretty high wage.
Yeah. So I don't know about that. Again, we don't focus on that. Thank you for your questions, though, about what's next. That's a legitimate question, and we are always concerned about that as well. I wanted to, you have a couple of pages that have colorful little charts on there. Commissioner DeYoung, you asked me a while back to give me some more, to provide more data in terms of what's going on in Josephine County. So, I've put together some data for you. First of all, you know, when you look at just the population base of our service territory, Josephine County makes up 28% of that population. That's just the starting point. You can see that we've done 15 edge profiles here since we started that in 2014. This one on the bottom left hand, the work destination report, I think is a really telling chart. So of the employees, of the residents that live in Josephine County, 17% of them commute to Jackson County for work.
Why are the numbers the same?
And that's just an anomaly. I looked at that too. Like, this is 2015 data, comes from the U.S. Census. And then it just happens to be the same number, but 5% of Jackson County is coming this way. So you have nearly 4,000 people going both ways on the freeway every day.
Like log trucks passing.
Assuming they work every day. But that just points to like how regional in nature we are, our region, that people are going all over the place. You can get data too that says how many commute from Lane County or Siskiyou County or Douglas. I thought that's just an interesting stat to share with you.
I always like these statistics because a lot of times people are they don't like the fact that they're not getting the business in their community because, of course, we want those tax dollars. But the reality is, even when Jackson County wins, our people are getting the jobs. They're getting the employment. Mm-hmm. So that's a win for us as well.
You also know that we have a loan program that's been since 1994. Those dollars came from the EDA and the USDA because we are the appointed economic development district. this is how it breaks out between the two counties. 44% of all of our loans have gone to Josephine County. It's 1,193 jobs. This is since 1994. $20 million investment, total project investment, of which $7.3 million of that was SoReady loans to those companies. And then you can see how Jackson County has about 56% of them.
Are all those, did you have to, did any of them default on their
own? Oh, yes, yep. We have, and that's why SoReady exists. We're a gap financer. We take on the higher risk loans. Most of these folks may not on their own be able to go to a bank because they don't have enough financials yet. They're startup companies. There's a few of them that have defaulted over time, a few of them in this county, as well as a couple that we're chasing right now in Jackson County, but we're established to take on higher risk loans. So wanted to show you how that breaks down between the two counties. There's a next page that is a specific to the enterprise zone stats. As you know, we're the enterprise zone manager for three different zones, soon to be four again. Jackson County has their own rural enterprise zone. The rogue zone is everything in Josephine County right now, commercial and industrial properties. And then Medford has its own zone. So this shows you how many enterprise zone applications in the entire region have we processed, nearly 150. Breaks it down in the rogue zone since 1997. That's when you started having enterprise zones. 50 of those have been processed through our office. It's me right now that does that. There's no charge to them. This is a complimentary service. This is what the membership dollars pay for, so we can provide complimentary business services to businesses. So that's just the number of applications. If you look to the next one on the right, that's how many jobs. So you can see that in the rogue zones, again, since inception, that enterprise zone affected over 3,200 jobs, either created or retained. Okay. The bottom one on the left-hand side talks about how much was the investment. So $88.9 million invested in Josephine County through enterprise zone applications. They're adding equipment, or they're adding on, or they're building something.
We're going back 20 years. So do you have any data that says of the companies that we invested in that are still in business and that are successful after 20 years? You know, I had a friend of mine, and he ran a fast food restaurant. And I told him, I said, you need to apply for a state funding as being the number one employer in Josephine County. And he said, yeah. I said, why am I the number one employer? I said, you hire 2 to 3 employees 3 or 4 times a week. They don't last very long, but the statistic is how many people you have hired.
Yeah.
And you've hired 300 in a year's time. They're not there anymore, but the statistic is how many people did you hire.
So I could go back and look and see specifically how many are still operating.
Just curious.
Some of them, for example, would be Marzi Sinks, Encore Ceramics, Oregon Swiss Precision, Krauss Craft has taken advantage multiple times of enterprise zone applications. MasterBrand is not available to retail. It has to be traded sector companies.
Right.
And they're on the hook for those jobs. If they don't create those jobs, they have to pay back that tax.
Okay.
Well, and one thing to keep in mind, too, is it's not the number of people hired, it's the number of jobs created. So you might get 5 people going through that one job created, but we look at the one job created.
Okay.
So
So I've broken it down between retained jobs and new jobs, because what happens in the enterprise zone, let's just pick a company that has 100 employees. They're doing a project that's eligible. They have to create 10% new jobs. So they have to create 10 new jobs. Taylor Sausage just put in another enterprise loan application, and they will create another 8 jobs because they're adding on to their manufacturing plant and doing some supply and stuff related to that in the retail section. But retail and manufacturing has to be separated out. So they have about 80 employees right now that just work in the manufacturing portion of their business, not the cafe. And so they'll add another 8.
So they wouldn't be able, the 8 employees, they couldn't put them in the cafe side of it. It has to be in the processing.
That's right. We can't count the retail side because those aren't the higher wage jobs with benefits. So that's what we're after. This is a program from the state legislature.
Okay.
So we always have to break down on the applications how many retained jobs and then how many new jobs related to that. And that's why I broke it down into two graphs. So that's just some of the data I wanted to share with you in terms of, you know, you often ask the question, and it's legitimate, what is SoReady doing in Josephine County? Well, hopefully this paints a better picture about what we're doing. Not always visible, that's for sure, but we are definitely at work in Josephine County, as we are in Jackson County as well. Behind that are the two profiles we just talked about, and behind that is just the press release regarding Mary Heber, who's one of the speakers coming to the launch symposium in Ashland. And then lastly, I wanted to share with you on the very back page, our board of directors, including you, Commissioner DeYoung. We're going through Aaron Oslin, who's our board president, has been walking us through and making sure that we all understand what it is that SoReady does. This is the draft mission, vision, operating values. Just wanted you to know this is what we do. You know, why do we exist? It really is to advance business expansion in Southern Oregon. And what do? Well, we help companies launch, relocate, and prosper, which is a whole bunch of other things that we've talked about. And what is our vision? This one is still draft, not approved by the board. It really is to be the most business-friendly region on the West Coast, period. We want to attract businesses that create jobs, etc. And we have fun with our operating principles. You know, how do we do our job? We're very responsive. We hear that frequently from companies. We like to say that we're ridiculously tenacious. In fact, we call ourselves, we like to say we're rogue-diculous. But, you know, we just, we're passionate about what we do. And our primary goals really are to champion a regional approach for economic development and community strength. Because remember the data of people going back and forth? It's one big region. We promote the creation and retention of jobs, quality jobs. And we advocate for streamlined government services.
How do you do that? Where is the cohesive strategy in the Rogue Basin? That is perfect. It's great. But I can't think of something I struggle with. Wouldn't it be great if we had, like, SoReady appoints a committee, and they go around, and they, or hire a consultant. We all pitch in, you know, $50,000 or whatever, and they go around to every planning program, and they streamline everything from the standpoint that when you go anywhere in this area, same rules are going to apply. We're gonna change our RLDC. I haven't had a single amendment proposed. 7 years I've been here. I mean, what have we done?
We actually have a planning group. Julie participates. Susan C. Ryder participates. We meet quarterly, all the planners. We were here just last month at Wilder Brewing to talk about best practices and figure out what is the lowest hanging fruit, what is one thing we can do and be unified. Everybody has different codes and processes, so we're trying to find at least one thing where we can be unified in the planning departments, but we're sharing best practices, so we're taking steps that way.
We tried
it to be simple, but it's not.
Yeah, we tried looking to see if we could all get the same timelines, and that didn't go so well. We tried seeing if we could all get the same application process. It's difficult when you're dealing with cities and counties and... Mm-hmm.
Sure, cities should align, counties should align. That's what your alignment should be. Mm-hmm. You know, at least that. We're not even aspiring to align with the city. That's not a goal of ours.
And we have, we've actually taken steps more towards alignment with Jackson. I have to admit it was a little easier when Kelly was there. They went a long time without the director now. So,
great.
Yeah, but I've talked to my staff about trying to align with their timelines as well I've gotten a little pushback saying, you know, we're strapped, we can't do it, but we need to just keep working towards that. But SoReady's been facilitating those meetings to try and get us to do that.
Yeah, at least finding best practices, and particularly around, you know, what worked in Eagle Point that Central Point can learn from, or Cave Junction,
for
or whatever.
For example, a really good one we talked about at our last meeting was in Medford, they're delaying their system development charges. So instead of paying those up front, when a business comes in, instead of paying those up front, they're delaying when you pay those.
Or certificate of occupancy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it'd be nice if, you know, Grants Pass would do that as well, because it's a lot easier for the business to swallow rather than having that money up front, have it later on in the process.
I think you're going to have to, and system development charges are probably one of my sticking points, because when I first got on the city council, they were getting ready to lose Home Depot because of system development charges. They lost the sale up there where Winco is right now because of system development charges on the city side. And every time I said something about, well, you need to alter that. In fact, I was the one that asked when they appealed $625,000 for Home Depot. I finally had to ask the question. I said, if we don't grant your appeal for $625,000 reduction in system development charges, are you going to go forward with the construction of that building? And the guy said, no. And I said, if we give you that $625 discount, when do you start? He says, April of this year. That's as simple as it got. Mm-hmm. But you look over to staff, and they were furious that I even asked the question. And afterward, David Reeds came up and said, how dare you throw away $625,000 of taxpayer money? I said, you don't get it. If we don't give them that discount, you are throwing away $5.5 million worth of SDCs and upgrades to our own transportation system. And they would have gone elsewhere. You don't count it as your money till you have it.
Right.
And so that's the that's the philosophy you're going to have to change, that government does stand in the way at almost every juncture of development. Mm-hmm. And if we can't do that, whether it takes too long to get a permit, or I feel threatened about the permit, I feel this about that, public works, everything. All these different threats that we, government, if we don't fix that philosophically, we ain't going anywhere. You're wasting your time. And I don't want you to waste your time.
So we are doing some things to advocate for that and trying to find what are some simple things we can start with to do. And Commissioner Hare, you mentioned, you know, what if we had one regional strategy? We're working on that, actually. It will come before our board of directors in June. The city of Medford asked specifically if we could help create a regional strategy, not for the city of Medford, a regional strategy that brings us all together. So we're going to start talking about that in June to see if our board of directors wants to go down that pathway.
And the SDCs, is that specific, Queen? Is that specific to SDCs?
On the regional strategy, no, not specific. Just in terms of what we want to be and work as a region on.
The counties don't have system development charges.
Josephine County, Jackson County does.
Jackson County does have?
Yes, and so you have an advantage over here right now that you do not have it. Okay. You're one of the few counties in the state that does not have system development charges.
Between the countywide enterprise zone and the no system development charges, we're actually in a pretty good position.
Yeah. So what's missing, though, and I'll just address this real quick, Julie had asked us to follow up with her on some reasons why certain projects may not have landed in Josephine County. And if you go to the very last page, Rob put this together for her. We've had a couple of projects that we couldn't respond to, period. Project Varietal and Eagle, because of, you look and you see how much acreage they want, 100 plus acres. We have nothing that we can respond to. When you get down to the bottom of this, Project Bead, Invisible, and Switch, those are all projects that are currently in negotiations of property in White City. And you can see what they had, what they were interested in. We just don't have the larger portions of property that are ready to go to meet their timelines. But we'd love to have something out in the Merlin. You know, we talked to Dutch Bros extensively about, you know, selling their property, and I know that you're working on that now, but trying to open up more properties specifically in Josephine County that we can address and prepare. But right now, we don't really have those larger properties.
I don't want a 100-acre, 3,500 job company here.
Yeah, no. So that would be rough. That would be rough. But this is just a reflection of the types of things that come to us.
No, but the five acre ones would have been nice to.
Those are great.
The five acres are just perfect.
I would rather have 100 of those, because you lose $1 billion investment, 3,500 jobs in a community of our size.
Yeah.
And we die overnight. All the ancillary businesses that support those, they die, where all of our eggs are in one basket.
That's right.
A terrible way to be. That's not a way to build an economy. But 100 or 25 acre places, mm-hmm. that's perfect, because none of those are You've got a distributed portfolio.
One can drop right. off and it doesn't affect it.
And that's really why.
Of them can. Who cares? That's just fine. We'll survive.
Your point about diversification is exactly why Sobeys was established 30 years ago, was to diversify.
Yeah.
Because we were so dependent on timber industry, right. which we still love, and we want more of those jobs that we have successfully diversified. For that very reason, not to have all our eggs in one basket. Yeah.
The reason why I'd ask Colleen for this is because the lots in the North Valley, everybody wants to be by I-5. And in the North Valley Industrial Park, we have one available right now. And the lots that are there, even if they were all to go up for sale, they're not large enough for what people are looking for. So I was looking to say, is there a different place where we could start a large lot, I'm saying 5-acre, large lot industrial park next to I-5? And I did find a piece of property. That's something.
Hawkins, that property that's got all that junk on it.
Yeah,
and
he wants to budge on it.
Well, he wants to do his storage unit proposal, isn't it?
And the permits are expired now, I think, because he waited.
Is that Ward Hawkins where all that stuff is along I-5? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, you know, a lot of people say we got lots of land, but it doesn't mean that it's available land or ready to go land. You know, not speaking about Jackson and Justin County.
It feels as though it's the right price. I mean, the land is there, the proximity to what will be the North Valley Industrial Park sewer system. That's the place. I don't want to start trying to find something, you know, off. That's it.
That's
a
great property.
It's like having White City and saying, no, we're going to have to locate in Ashland or something right there on the hills because we don't have those properties in White City aren't available. Mm-hmm. It seems like there should be some sort of a rule out there. Look, you need to put this into employment land production, make it available. You can't just sit on it. Who does that?
Well,
Ward.
Well, most of the people. But, you know, a private property owner can
do whatever they want.
You know, that's just kind of a right.
A question I've always had, because then you made the statement that 60% of the businesses have 20 employees and less, and I've always been an advocate, and you were going to work on it, I think, through the realtors, as to what do we have available right now. You know, say, for instance, I'm in Ballinger Industrial Park. There are no places for rent out there right now, but maybe Don Carter farther down on N Street Industrial, he may have so many square feet. And so that when somebody comes saying, yeah, I'm looking to move in, they say, we've got a spot for you over here on N Street. This is how much it is. These are fenced-in yards, so on, so on, so on. You want to go look at that. It's already in inventory, and although they may want to build, they want to get started right now, and they may sign a year or two-year lease. Then they can say, you know what, we're going to go to Kirby out there and buy that whole mill site out there.
It may. It just depends on what they're doing. They don't want to move twice, typically.
Right, but there are businesses that want to start up and move here right away with maybe an abbreviated version of their company. And I don't know whether we had any inventory, because when we bring the guy with the block plant, with the styrofoam blocks, we showed him a place to build his new building. Mm-hmm. But you know, if we have something and we're working on it, maybe he wants to get started here with an abbreviated C to see if his business model works. I know what his model was, that he wanted to be right smack in here or Medford, but if we can get his foot in the door through a rental side and availability of property, and if it's 20 employees, like they build in gun parts, for instance. There's little spots all over Southern Oregon that build gun parts. There are little bitty things in the industrial parks, you know, 1,200 square feet.
So to answer your question, we don't have a physical spreadsheet of inventory because it changes so often.
But that's what I mean. I thought we were going to work with the real estate group to say, can you keep us apprised of what's
up? We do that, sir. We do that. We have when we have a request for something big or small, we send out an email with a code name and the information to our distribution of real estate brokers and property owners saying, we're looking for this.
Okay.
Do you have it available? There's that, and then Rob is very good about looking to see what's listed on some of the different things. But industrial property, it's not like there's a glut of it out there.
No, there
is. We usually go to our real estate folks who might know about something that's not even available.
But in addition, in Josephine County, I have inventoried all the properties that are available. I started with Merlin, and I didn't get to Kirby yet. But so I have an inventory of all those industrial properties, which ones are for sale, what they're asking, and I keep Rob up to date on that. I actually gave him a new list on Friday when we met.
Thank you. So. So it's a complex thing that we do, but I want to say thank you for supporting us and doing that so that we can continue to respond to companies that are looking in our area. But right now, the heart of what we do really is reach out to our existing companies and make sure they have the resources they need to thrive. So they're already here. Those companies are already here. It's like visiting. It's like keeping your current customer. Yeah. You know, most job creation will come from companies that already exist. Well over 85% of the jobs will come from companies that are already here. And so we have lots of services to help them, including the enterprise zone. So, but we're still open, and we still take inquiries from outside the region of what we have to offer. So
okay, any questions?
It's complex. I thank you for your time.
Great. You bet. Thank you, Colleen.
Okay.
Look forward to seeing you and working with you in the future.
Yep. Hopefully we'll see you soon.
That concludes item number one, the SoReady updates. And we're moving on. We're going to skip two for right now and bring up Matt Pichorek from the U.S. Forest Service.
Can you stay for just a second, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm going to need to take a break. Have you registered for that conference up north?
We were just talking about that.
I had a suggestion that I didn't know if your interest was as high now as it was when we first talked about this. And my suggestion was, is if you haven't registered and you don't want to go, that maybe you could exchange something. I don't want to talk you out of it, but if you want to go, you should.
We've kind of had that conversation this morning, and we'll carry that on.
Great. You guys do whatever you want to do. I just want to make sure that translated. Mr. Pichorek, I apologize. I have to use the restroom.
No problem.
I'm going to have to take some day clothes in my car.
Where's Wendy go? I've got to have her warm my coffee up while we're doing that fast, if you don't mind.
No problem.
I'm liking it already. There's nothing bothers me more than a bunch of meeting after meeting after meeting. I can dig it. How's everything going?
It's going very well. How about yourself?
Clucking along. Trying to get this marijuana thing. Gosh, I got to focus on it, but I got to take my eyes off it. But every once in a while, I get really depressed. I just want to go fix it.
Yeah.
And it won't be in a good way, so. I think I'm afraid, the sad thing, I'm afraid we're losing this battle. And if we do, we'll lose Southern Oregon. I've got good people moving out of here, just one right after another, saying, you know what? We gave the state 2.5 years to fix it after they passed the 91. And, oh, yeah, just wait, you know, all our state representatives, oh, yeah, boy, we've been working hard up there, and it didn't do anything to stop what they were talking about. Thank you very much. And then it was, gee, we're going to have an ordinance from the county. We have an ordinance from the county, and it gets sent to Luba and shot down by Luba, who never really even read it, because it had everything in there in the favor of the people that were already in business, so they wouldn't lose that business. So, anyway, I guess we're not supposed to talk because we're on recording. But yeah, it's going to be a struggle.
Yeah. So.
Anyway. For the recorder, we're taking a short break. It is 9:48, so we'll be back in here in just a few minutes.
Yeah, I'm getting over. I was sick last week.
Well, Simon had it last week.
Yeah, Thursday, Friday, I took work off.
Hit cold and chest.
Yeah,
that's what he had.
Remnant cough, but I feel a lot better now.
You have kids?
Yeah.
That's why.
I know.
They bring everything home from school. Yep. Trying to wait for the weather to break a little bit. I have to primer a car, and I'm just
I think it looks like next week.
Another week. Supposed to be nice.
It starts to 60s and less chance of rain. So.
Perfect. I just need to get the primer on it. It's much better if I take it out of the shop and just shoot it out in the driveway.
What kind of car?
Well, it's a 65 Buick Sport Wagon. It's got a Vista Cruiser top in it. I bought it, the drunk impound I bought over in Phoenix, I think, Talent or Phoenix. Gosh, 15, 20 years ago, I finally got around to doing it. I've got a 56 Beller hardtop that's getting ready to go in the car show over there, and I've got to get it done too, but it's just a matter, I got to send it to Medford to have it tuned up. And then the boys got one more shot at the upholstery shop. Finish off kit panels, and one door panel's about a half an inch too long. When I got all the carpet in and the thresholds, the sills, the door panels were too long, and they rub against it, so I got to fix that. And I wanted to put piping on the armrest instead of front stitching. So I got a couple of things to correct. I got to have it ready by April the 22nd, I think, is when that car show was over there. And I got to change the rear end in my wife's Nova. I got all kinds of stuff.
Never ends.
Corvette needs a clutch this year. But that gets me out of here. I go out there and close the door.
Turn it off. Turn the phone off.
Turn the music off. Turn the phone off.
Yeah.
And have at it. It's good therapy for me.
My first job was a mechanic at a British car shop.
What's that?
My first job was a mechanic at a British car shop.
Yeah. I enjoy it. I mean, I don't rent myself out. I don't do work for other people. I've built some really nice cars. In fact, Sean Penn, the actor, he had one of our El Caminos called El Silverado for a while. He bought it at Barrett Jackson. But then I've got half a dozen magazine cars that went into magazines. We built a race car, an old 65 Gasser race car, drag race car. It ended up on the front cover of New Zealand V8 magazine with a 6-page article on it. Nice. So, and it was in New Zealand Hot Rod. It was in Super Chevy magazine and Chevelle World magazine. So it did real well. When I sold it, I told it it couldn't bend. But when I got done with it, I had about $6,500 in it. Because I did it all myself. I had a ton of hours. I mean, my 56 Chevy, I've got all the labor in it, but I don't have that much involved in it. It's just an old hot rod. I replicated the car I had in high school. Nice. So it's identical to my high school car, other than the fuel injection. But it's neat. It's my hot rod. I had to really stop and think. As I was building that car, I had to stop and think, what did I do when I was 16 years old with no money?
Yeah.
So it's built like a 16-year-old put it together with no money. There are flaws in the bodywork, and there's, I primered it, I painted it flat black myself. I did back then, and I did it this time. But I had to really stop myself. So,
it doesn't be perfect.
Don't block it again. If it's wavy in places and the fenders don't line up with the doors, so what? That's the way the old car was. But it was a hot rod. We used to go do a lot of drag racing, was it over at the coast in Medford and whatnot. We'd go there and pick off cars. Are we ready?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, we're back in at 9:53, and with us is Matthew Pachorik with the U.S. Forest Service. We're moving on to item number 3, U.S. Forest Service routine updates and upcoming topics.
Thank you.
Morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Excellent. Thanks for having me here today. Sorry it's been a little while.
Matthew, we see you more than the BLM, ODF. ODF was just here last week, but no. We really appreciate it.
Okay. So anytime if I'm not here enough for you, just let me know and I'll be happy to. So
it's good to see you.
The one big topic I wanted to talk about today is our upcoming Upper Bridge project.
Okay.
And it's a kind of a landscape restoration project in the Briggs Valley area, which is about 11 miles due west of here, Sam Brown Campground, Big Pine Campground, that area. This is kind of a summary of our EA that's about to go out. I didn't want to bore you to death with that that big one. So I just kind of summarized the key things. And I'll just hit a couple things in here. And then...
do you have a map in there in here?
You know, I didn't... I do have one, right? I have a big one right here. I didn't include a small one.
I think it's important that we know what
yep.
upper big Briggs Creek landscape takes in.
Height
okay.
So Grand Pass right here.
All right.
Going out to Cape Junction and then Rogue River right here. So the 20, if you're familiar with 25 Road, that's kind of the main road that bisects it from Galice over to Hayes Hill.
Okay.
So
I tried that road on Sunday. I didn't get very far.
No.
I got about 7 miles up.
I was going to say, I heard you probably could get about there, and then I'm not sure how far you can get.
Yeah, not very
far. Did you
far.
Come in from, you came
yeah,
in from
I came
Hayes
from
Hill?
Hayes
yeah.
Hill, 7 miles, and I had to off-road it at probably mile 5, you know, put it in four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
There's that much of snow.
Oh, wow.
So it's cool. And then it's gonna snow later on this week.
That's what I heard.
Or something.
It gets better next week.
That's really great. I mean, late March, we're going to have snow up there in the first part of April.
Yeah.
You know, that's really great. For fire season. Yeah. When we started the winter out, so terrible.
I don't know if we have pack up there, but we have snow up there.
Well, it'll be something more than
something.
What we've had, more than what I thought we were going to have.
Yeah,
I thought we were.
It was, yeah.
It was real bad.
Yeah, I've only.
This winter was so dry.
It's, I think I was just over 30 inches in Cape Junction area.
Yeah, I was driving out in places
last
on the ranch I should not have been able to drive.
Yeah.
Cool.
So,
but
okay.
That's a big chunk.
So, yeah, let me explain.
So we got starting to. This is all Taylor Creek right here.
Yes,
Taylor
this
Creek
is actually Creek. The upper end of the Briggs Creek watershed.
Okay.
All right. So, okay. I'll kind of...
In that area.
So,
parts are
kind of
teal.
This.
Oh, we don't.
This area.
We own this.
Yeah.
You want that? We should talk about
we
that.
We should talk about that. So to kind of explain how we got to this point. So we looked at the entire watershed. So we had a couple large fires in the past, kind of Onion Mountain Fire right here. Biscuit, Oak Flat, we're kind of in this area. So that's kind of why we focused in on this area, because some of the work got done during those fires as far as restoration. And then this is, if you're familiar with Corn Ridge, it's kind of that serpentine outcrop of the open forest and grassland up there. So there's really nothing to do up there.
Yep.
So that's why there's some, we focused on this area where that the treatment is. Went through, we looked at all the stands of timber and where do we need to work. All of this is spot owl critical habitat, so you know we had to keep that in mind. We looked at some treatments along the roads for fuel reduction purposes, some of the key ridge lines in this area, and then where we needed to do some work to improve wildlife habitat, to look at forest health issues, and this is kind of where we ended up.
Is the spotted owl's condition improving, or, I mean, is there any chance that at some point in time they're going to go, you know what, spotted owl was a myth to begin with, and it's gotten better, so we're going to pull it?
So,
we're spending a lot of money on spotted owl habitat.
Yes.
Just keeping it up. Are we doing any good? Are the owls coming back? Are they not coming
back?
Are they getting worse?
I mean, in the short answer is there's a general decline in spotted owl.
So what we've done by putting all this stuff aside and hand-picking the weeds and stuff has done nothing to help them go back up.
Yeah,
but nothing changes that policy at this level.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's just a question.
Okay, so the short version is if we did everything, we never logged another tree for the next 15, 20 years, it would last till 2050. At our current trajectory, it's pretty much under the extinct model by 2035.
I don't know the exact numbers, but I would say it's
2035.
Yeah.
I went to the 20-year review of the listing of the spotted owl up in Vancouver or Victoria, whichever one up in Washington. That's it. And
there was a 3.5% negative trajectory in the habitat by the just the Biscuit fire alone. That's how much habitat was destroyed in that 550,000 acre fire. It was huge to have it burn that much. I mean, it was negative in a lot of regards, but for habitat, it just decimated a whole portion. What's the likelihood that this area is going to burn? I mean, my thought is you're going to do all these treatments and then it's just going to burn through there?
Well, I would say...
fire resiliency treatment?
That's part of it. And I think it's a really high likelihood because kind of that's why we picked this, because right. It hasn't
it's
burned. Because, you know, onion
left.
Fire, Biscuit, Oak Flat, that's why we want to focus on it because, yeah. You know, there's a lot of high-value stuff in there. It's recreational, you know, habitat.
Briggs Valley is beautiful.
It's beautiful. So that's why this rose high on our list of things to do next. So variety of treatments to take place in there. You know, there'll be commercial timber output. There'll be some non-commercial stuff, you know, a variety of things. You know, I know in the past you've had concerns about some of our road stuff, so I'll go into that in just a little bit, but we're proposing some changes in our road stuff. So part of the, you know, improved habitat, while also, you know, by improving habitat, we mean also protecting it from fire, so, because this section here is just, it's pretty some unbelievable neat stand of trees in there, some, you know, really big one.
Is the Hunky Bunk Valley Jotam Down store still up there in Brick Valley?
I have no idea.
We were hunting up there one day, and I went up a creek. Just between almost to Sam Brown, and I went upstream up in that, or it might have been downstream, I know, and out of the middle of nowhere there was, we came to this little community. It was like three or four cabins and it looked like an old mercantile. Valley Jotam Down,
you know, there is some structures out here in that private land.
Might be something off of the bar mine or something. Okay, interesting. Okay,
so kind of our timeline on this project, probably in the next couple weeks, we'll be sending the draft environmental assessment out to the public. I just wanted to, you know, make sure I got a chance to speak with you about it. Put that out for comment. The final, you know, a month or so after that, and then we're looking at doing this project in our fiscal year 19, which starts October. So,
Is there anything that we have to ask about Big Pine Campground, what the disposition of that is, and
so that's,
what its future is? I know the Big Pine's dead, so do you pull that out of there and call Big Pine Campground anymore?
It's actually going to be separate from this project. It's going to be a parallel. We purposely left it out because of, you know, the interest in that.
Okay.
And I can hit on that. What we're doing right now is I asked our forest health folks to go out there and do a up-to-date assessment of all the hazards out there. We're going to look to see, you know, what it would cost and what we would get back, kind of a cost-benefit analysis of cutting those trees, and then also what it would cost to bring the campground up to a spot where we could open. So that's kind of the next step, is grab those numbers and ask for input from the public on,
right.
Okay, what should we do?
Because
basically we have two options. It's either we close it down permanently, because we can't have a campground with known hazard trees, or we cut all the trees that are hazards and reopen the campground, knowing that we've probably drastically changed the setting of that campground with a lot of those trees out. So that's kind of where we're at right now. And probably...
Are they hazard trees because they're diseased or that they're just old?
They're dead. So we have an assessment process where we look at, you know, okay, this tree died. What's the likelihood of it's going to fail? You know, is it, you know, if it fails, is it going to land on a campsite or things
right.
like that? So we actually have people trained specifically for that to go look, evaluate these trees and make a determination on, okay, this one we can just, we'll see what it is next year, see if it's still... Or maybe it's solid, it's going to last a couple of years, and we would just monitor it. And some would be like, no, we have to cut it. So they'll produce that assessment, and then we can use that to help make a decision moving forward.
Okay.
Matthew, just for context, I appreciate you guys looking into that. We have a pretty extensive park system in Josephine County. We just do that every year. It's part of our assessment. It's part of our routine element of maintaining our park system. It's kind of like the idea of these, no offense to you, it's at a higher level. The federal agency is not actually, you know, really understanding that fire is a known quantity on our landscape. And the it just seems like the ability not to deal with it after the fact in a timely fashion. Like, okay, well, now let's talk about scoping it in 9 months. No, we're harvesting, we're done. You know, I mean, we've done our assessments of owl habits, circles, all that stuff we have to do. You guys have higher scrutiny and levels, but it's frustrating from a standpoint that they didn't die last year. They didn't die the year before. They've been dead for years, right? So where is it, you know, just in the schedule of what we do to maintain? That's how we work. And it's frustrating for people out there because it's like, this didn't sneak up on us. They're old trees. They're big. Why are we dealing with it, you know? It seems like the local extension of the bureaucratic wheel.
I can appreciate that.
Waiting too long.
It's frustrating for us on this side.
I appreciate it. And I can say, I'll answer it a couple ways.
You did just kind of get here. You didn't, yeah.
We evaluate all our campgrounds every year. Right. So we do routine maintenance on and hazard trees in all our campgrounds. How this was a little bit different was that such a large number kind of showed up at once.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Big Pine of the Big Pine campground
right.
was one of those, along with a whole bunch of really big ones. And so initially we took the step of just closing the campground because we couldn't, you know, from a liability standpoint, we couldn't take that on. And then the problem, you know, then, okay, how does that fit into priorities? You know, I hear probably an equal number of like, please don't cut the trees, as I do, please cut the trees and reopen the campground. So,
well, we can ask a non-binding question on an election. I hate these four or five people that come and say, don't cut the tree. Mm-hmm. No, we want the campground open.
Right.
If you want to go look at a large
tree, campground.
You're blessed to be in the only region of the nation where you can go down within an hour's drive and look at the redwoods. Nobody else can do that.
Nobody.
So, okay. You know, I hear the couple of people that are probably very vocal, but you have a board of commissioners that is very active in wanting to, our star is supposed to be hitched to recreation because, you know, this kind of a thing doesn't return shared receipts to us at 25%. So where is that recreational component? These people don't have the ability to lock up everything and say, I'm sorry, we're going to shut down that campground because we don't want you to cut that tree. No, you said we can't cut every other tree. We're going to do recreation. So that's the argument that I would have in a room with anybody on that subject.
Yes, exactly.
That's ridiculous. We want to see that campground open.
Okay.
And that's a priority for us.
Okay.
Whatever it takes to get that on a plan to get there. So recreation is an opportunity for everybody to appreciate. That's key for us. So especially what have already been previously designated. And hopefully there's some big pine trees in that area that will get to be the big pine tree. And part of that probably has to remove dead and dying, diseased, potentially, trees around them. That's good forest management. So, anyway.
Okay. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
So, I'll commit to you that as soon as this clears the plate, which is hopefully pretty soon,
yeah,
that we'll get out, we'll finish up our assessment. The other part is, you know, from a, okay, do we have to pay money to cut these trees down? Are they going to pay their way out?
They probably would have had we had a plan when they were, back in the day, but pine isn't bringing anything right now. You're going to have to pay to take these down.
And so,
the frustrating thing that I see is you're going to be paying for creating habitat for an owl that's going extinct in a place that's probably going to burn in the next 10 years. I can almost guarantee it, this landscape's going to get hit because everything else has been hit around it. So you're paying for an owl that's going to go extinct for habitat. Where's the human species habitat that needs to be protected as well? That's the roads and that's the campgrounds, if nothing else. So it's a priority for us.
We hear from our citizenry that Sam Brown's slipping, and it's nobody's paying attention to those campgrounds. I haven't been up there in years, but when I was younger, gosh, our family used to go up and stay at Big Pine. My family, I took my wife and kids, and gosh, we'd just go up there for the weekend. And, you know, just to get out of here, and gosh, it was so much fun for the little kids because they could explore and do whatever they need to do. This one in Hammacher. I visit Hammacher an awful lot because it's right there on the river. But that's just me. I mean, I'm not asking for something special, but I think it's just part of our inventory as a tourist destination. We've been told, you know, okay, tourism is going to take the place, you know, will help take the place of timber industry. It never will. But however, and then to let all of our attractions for tourism slowly but surely go away, it's like, gee, do you want us to do nothing? You know,
They don't want us to live here. Some of those people.
They want us to live in Portland, and I'm not going to go there.
You shouldn't live in
against the rural divide, but that's fine. But I think I'm just curious about that. You've got trees in there that need to come out. Did they just die of old age? Because you know, you talk to the people that chain themselves to the cats and whatnot. These things live on for billions of years, and they don't. I think they're like anything else. It reaches a maturity, and then it starts to deteriorate. And to not pluck those trees out of there now that they're gone would be like saying, yeah, Grandma died 3 years ago and she's still in the chair over there because we don't want to get rid of her. I don't know whether I can go for that either. So if we can enhance that campground, and there are plenty of big pines around there. If I came from California, I wouldn't be looking for the big pine. I'd be saying, wow, big pines are everywhere. So that's...
Okay.
That's this commissioner. I'm not speaking.
No, I really appreciate that. So, again, we'll get that assessment done.
Let's get this one. I think you're saying let's get this one off.
I'll commit to making sure that follows shortly.
Is there some sort of a requirement? I mean, that you're trying to accommodate with managing this park in this way? Because it feels as though you're, you know, getting the assessments and everything, they sound pretty extensive.
No, they're not. They're
ours
not.
Are, you know, water, the, there's a dead tree.
The hazard tree is, I know, is already halfway done.
Okay.
So it's good. Not a
good.
Insurmountable hobby.
It feels like
it's more, honestly,
an EIS or something like
no,
that.
No, that part isn't.
Really?
And what's held us back really is just the weather. We haven't been able to get out there.
Yeah.
So
great.
I think as soon as that clears up, we can finish that off, have that ready to go, and be able to go, okay, here's kind of what it's going to cost.
Okay.
Going back to the Upper Briggs project, and I know in the past, you know, some concerns about some
roads.
Of our roads.
Yeah.
So,
I felt he understood where my concerns are. At RS-2477 roads, that shouldn't be talked about. As far as challenging the travel management plan, is all of this in the travel management plan?
All of
what you're planning to do, because that's the isn't that the point of a travel management plan, like in a resource management plan, to delineate what you're planning to do for the next.
So the travel management plan displays a system of open roads that the public can use.
Yes.
And so I'll dive into a little bit, if I may, and then
right.
And then we can come back to that.
Okay.
I think it might help with the conversation.
Great.
So, as part of the process, we looked at all our roads in this watershed. I had all make sure all the timber folks were there, all the fire folks. Okay, what roads do we need, and we can support? Because you know, 4,500 miles of road. You know, we can support like 10% of maintenance every year.
You used to be able to maintain all of them. In fact, your agency built them, Matthew. So
that. Unfortunately,
yep. I get you. Any of my frustrations, Matthew, they're not.
I get it.
They're
I
not
it.
Focused at you. I just find it terribly egregious that, you know, we built all this stuff, and now our country can't even maintain it. It's embarrassingly ridiculous. But recreators is another component that needs to be at the table. It's not just forest managers, because there are fewer and fewer of those. Hikers and
so you know. So we're proposing to decommission. I want to define that for you.
Yes,
it means different things to different people.
Right.
So decommissioning means, in one aspect, you know, we have a database of roads. In order for us to remove roads from those database, we need to decommission it. And then there's like the physical closure of roads out there on the land. Some of the roads I'm going to talk about today are not passable
currently.
And
what percentage of roads are not passable currently?
But I would say maybe a third to a half of these roads. And I brought a couple of examples of. So this is the 6-7 run road, which is right here. That's the start of the road right there. So all these roads, I made sure that we had folks go out there and physically walk and get in the, an up-to-date, here's what the current status is.
Do you have pictures of all of them?
Not all of them. I do have some of them, and I brought a couple examples. So, the 175, which is this road right here.
Now, so, I have a question, and you're probably getting ready to answer it because you said decommissioning means a lot different to different people. To me, that's dumb.
That is. In fact, we won't do anything more with that.
But however, don't go in there with a ripper and rip it all up and put berms and all that other stuff in it, because that right there, for instance, if you really did, the roadbed is still there, the step. And if you really had to get in there to fight a fire, you can walk an eight down through there and have water trucks and firefighting equipment right behind you.
So
the bed is still there. You're not ripping it up and letting it go over.
So every single of these roads that someone walked and they go, what do we need? What would we need to do to secure it in a spot where it's not causing problems, basically?
Right.
And so we evaluated if there was a road out there that, hey, we're looking at in maybe a 10-year, 20 years, we're gonna want to use that road again. That's not on that list. Critical roads for fire or future management, we're not going to, for instance, this road right here, causing problems hydrologically.
Sure.
We still want to use that for fire and timber needs in the future. So I think the proposal is just to put a gate up there and pull some of the culverts that are causing problems, but leave the roadbed intact. With the exception of two roads, there's only two on this list that are currently open to the public, and that's this road, the 603 road, and this road, the 160 and the 600. All the other roads are close to the public. This is a trail. Some of these roads are remnants still on our database. In order for us to remove them from our database,
why do you have to remove them from your database? Why would you do that?
If they're in your database, are you mandated to maintain them?
No. I mean, we have
a classification. Some of them are not maintained.
Some of them are, we call it maintenance level one, which is out there, but we don't, aren't being used. So
what's the reason for closure? You said a lot of these roads are already closed.
Some of these, as a few examples.
I mean, not that. I mean, just a road that I go out there and all of a sudden there's a gate across and it's closed and it doesn't give me any explanation as to why. And I don't know why it was closed. It's a perfectly good road as far as I'm concerned. And I can't go out there. Why?
So there's a couple reasons. Sometimes there's seasonal closures, like in the wintertime, to stop the spread of some of our tree diseases. Sometimes they're just not graveled. They can't support winter or wet weather use, and just causes more damage. Sometimes, in the instance of this road system here, it's in the Horse Creek Meadow, it's been identified as important wildlife habitat.
It isn't important wildlife habitat. I mean, everybody can throw that designation anywhere. And what if the road negatively impact? I don't mean to give you a hard time, Matthew, but it just seems like people throw this stuff around. Some guy comes up and says, that's good habitat. We should take the road out. Well, people have been using that road for a trail and you're not planning on taking it.
So I was going to say, there's just gates on the road?
Yeah.
And the roadbed is, in fact, there's... I think a couple things drive us here is, number one, our road budget. And number two, these roads do cause problems when they're not maintained. And even roads that we do maintain fail and cause problems,
Is the road you just talked about, is that take off from Briggs Creek, Sam Brown, basically on the bottom?
The other side of Sam Brown.
And goes up that meadow and then comes up to the Onion Mountain Road.
Yes. It was probably closed like 30 years, aggregated a long time ago, is my understanding.
Yeah.
So,
That's probably all.
And that was designated through our forest planning process.
Yeah.
Not it wasn't tied in with the spot out stuff. That was kind of a separate.
You know, to push back on all these people who want all these gates to stay open, you know, to be perfectly honest, and I've talked to the old timers, the way the people use, you know, the roads and they're all interested in tearing it up.
Yeah, they're throwing their garbage out. That's a long ways to go to throw your garbage out, so you probably don't have that.
But they do, because they're out there and they're whatever, it's in the back of the truck. The crazy thing is, the way people use roads now, totally different than the mindset back in the 60s. Because they were the people who were building those roads, and they understood what it took to do that. None of these kids coming out with their 4x4s and stuff like that have ever built a road in their entire life.
In 1972, a friend of mine bought a four-wheel drive, and he was the first one of our whole bunch to have four-wheel drive. Now we all have four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
So, you know, I see the point. But that little job that you did up there is probably the finest gray squirrel hunting country in the whole wide world. I just let you know.
And so, just to run through a couple of particular. So this road was basically decommissioned itself. So,
you didn't have to do
that. That was one of those on the. Okay. It was one of the pictures. This road is basically what happened was this was the old road. It went further up to creek before they crossed it, and then at some point they
cut it off.
They cut it off earlier, so it's just the remnant of the road. It really doesn't go anywhere. It's just it's just the loop. So I didn't want you to think that these were massive changes to public access, to things like that.
That's what if I were going to be honest, Matthew, I just see this one being decommissioned. This looks like it goes somewhere. See, the topography looks like there's a point of interest there at the top of the peak. Is that a trail?
So this is a trail.
And how are you planning on decommissioning
it? So in this one, we're going to keep it as a trail.
What does that mean? Because I have that fear. I've done that Raspberry Lake trip where they took a D8 with a ripper on it. That was not a very pleasant road to travel on, even as a trail. I don't like that. And I would probably advocate that we would litigate on that one. We don't need to do that to decommission to where there's not an erosion component. I mean, I think there was more erosion and sediment change
after
that. Then just leaving the road kind of naturally atrophied
the way it's
supposed to, you know, but it was still, it would have been really passable and a beautiful trail to go in and out of Raspberry. And I don't mind walking further. You know, they put the berms and the gate way, you know, 4 or 5 miles out farther. I don't care. That's nice. I'm out here for a walk. But it just, the way they did that with the swales and stuff, I mean, my dad, I've never seen him that upset about just ruining that really nice experience. By every 100 feet, you have one of these dealios. It was just like, there's nothing natural about that. In fact, it just made the off-road people who got around the gate all that more excited and challenged that every 100 feet. They just had a rush.
Hold my beer, watch this.
Oh, it's just, and it was awful. So hopefully that's not an objective of your office.
So I think
I think you can accomplish what you want to accomplish, but not in such a, in a little more friendly way.
Is that possible?
I think it's really site specific on the particular thing. So, as an example, you know, this road, the 605 road, is one of those. I mean, you can drive by it and you couldn't even tell it's there. So there's, you know, nothing's going to change. You know, we're not proposing to do anything. The 603 is currently open. It's a gravel road. It's currently failing. It's in the bottom there. It's suffering from, you know, floods. You know,
sure.
High water. You know,
you can tell with the topography.
Yeah, it's right kind of flat. We still want to. We don't have any short term, but we have some long term management needs. So we're not proposing to get rid of that road. We're looking at pulling culverts out of it because they're failing. And then just leaving it, you know, the road in between, there will still be road beds and things like that. So hydraulic.
Why do we call that decommissioning it?
That's a problem. So I think the word you're looking for is obliteration. And that's that's one option in the decommissioning. You know, decommissioning could mean doing nothing. It could mean putting the gate on there. It could mean.
Why do you have to call it that? I mean, it's a road management element.
So that's why I wanted to define that, because I didn't want.
Decommissioning is the wrong word. I mean,
that's the word that's That's our accept. I know.
It even in that, I mean, it feels as though you're just making management adjustments to the existing road. I would like to hear that as opposed to deconstruction.
That's why I want to be here and explain what some of our proposals are. Because okay, it means
and all
things.
Of this is in your EIS.
Yes, or EA.
EA.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to think here. What else?
Can you go back to this one?
Sure. In fact, I do have.
Because this one seems to be, there's this trail that goes to like what looks like the top of a mountain. I mean, that's what people like to hike to.
Yeah, so I mean, actually,
2 miles, 3 miles?
Yeah, so I will.
Two and a half.
I mean,
that sounds like a nice little jaunt. You just get out there and.
So the trail's not affected by any of this. I mean, this trail would still be there.
It's not going to be obliterated.
No. In fact, let me.
Chrome Ridge. I picked up a piece of rock somewhere out. I think it was Queen of Bronze area. It's the heaviest rock I've ever picked up. My dad was like, it's chrome. It's just practically, you know, it's all from
a lot of chrome around here.
Tons of chrome. It was so heavy.
A friend of mine had a mine down in Patrick Creek.
Uh-huh.
And the chrome they were dragging out of there was rivaling Rhodesian chrome, which is the best in the world.
Best in the world.
Just a lot of chrome. That's amazing. Why I kind of think they have the.
So I think in this case, what it was there was some biscuit dozer line down here.
Uh-huh.
What it looks like the motorized use was people were, there's a trail there, so they started to become a motorized trail.
Yeah.
And our intent was to keep it as a trail. So, you know, developing kind of a trailhead up here.
Okay.
And, you know, making sure it's still a trail and where we're done. So.
Okay.
I just want to be more comfortable with the fact that it's just not a deal that some guy in Washington, D.C. is saying take all that out. And that the locals use of those facilities and those, it's still everybody's land. I get it. Okay, it's U.S. belongs to the U.S. government, but we're part of the U.S. government.
Well, I would argue it belongs to the people. So
yeah. So I just want to make sure that we're doing what's best for the people, but at the same time, not getting overzealous about saying, well, we're closing all off because that doesn't seem to be working with the owl who we're trying to save anyway. So I just get real cautious about that.
Yeah, and I totally appreciate that. So, you know, we made sure that any, you know, if one of these roads was providing access to a recreation facility, that, you know, one thing I didn't talk about was all the other roads that were not, you know, we look at and go, we still need, that road's in good shape, we need it for this.
Piqued my interest that this year I'm going to take a weekend and go up there in my old four-wheel drive, and it's because I know it. Won't quit, and I'll go up there and just nose around to see how it's changed in the last 50 years, because it's been probably 40 years since I've gone up there anyway.
Yeah, so, you know, this particular, you know, looks long, but it's actually inside of that road, that the Horse Creek Meadow, you know, so that there's no public access, right. There's no driving on that road already, and right. There hasn't been for some time, so... This is, you know, pulling some of the crossings.
But I could still stop at the upper end or
you could absolutely walk down there.
And grab my .22 rifle out of the rack and go down there and shoot gray squirrels like I used to.
Yep.
Okay. I just can't drive down there.
Yeah. So I'd be happy to leave this back here with you.
Yeah, that'd be swell.
And then also, you know, now is not the best time, but I'd be happy to do a field trip out there.
Right.
And we can stop at these roads and we can go, okay, here's why we were proposing this.
Yeah.
And...
Because I don't mind you taking something like this. Just leave it. To me.
And there's quite a few on the list that are...
Yeah, I think you've got Manzanita growing up and Slick growing up in the middle of it. You're not going to take a truck down that.
Yeah.
But so don't go in there with a ripper and tear it all up, because eventually you could use that. Like I say, you could run an 8 down that with a fire truck right behind it. And
there's a lot of people that have a perspective like you have to keep every road open that's ever been. It's like, wait a second.
No.
We don't manage. We have a 93% reduction in forest management on federal ground. We don't manage this portfolio the way we used to. We don't need the road infrastructure that we used to. Not all of these roads are great for recreational opportunities. But what I don't want to see us do is taking, what was that term you used? That was really just obliterating.
Yes.
That isn't necessarily good for the environment either, and it's bad for the new scheme of forest management, which is fire suppression. There's no consideration. It's just somebody in D.C. saying, "I want you to obliterate that road."
I can tell you right now that
terrible.
All of these were folks here on this district that went out and looked at it. I don't have a mandate to close roads for no reason. You know, there was a reason behind everything.
You know, one of the positive things with your travel
management...
You don't
have a quota.
Absolutely not.
You have to decommission every year, get rid of another 5% of them.
One of the positive things about your travel management plan when you and Rob came in was the idea that, yeah, we're decommissioning this 15 miles of roads, but we're also improving 104 miles of roads and, you know, bar ditching and whatever, all that stuff that you guys did. That was huge for me. I was like, there's a balanced approach to what we're trying to do. We're maintaining a portfolio of road infrastructure, and that takes a balance.
So one of the nice things about that road thing, too, is identify priority roads.
Right.
So we're not spending money on a road that basically just parallels a good road.
Right.
Right above it that we don't need. We're not spending money on that road. We're spending money on the road that,
good.
That you know, people
use.
Highly use.
Right.
We need it to for management, all those things.
Sure.
So, I mean, I think that's a good example. Okay, does this... This road ends eighth of a mile, parallels a road, eighth of a mile right above it. Is that, you know...
We're on the other side of the ridge.
We're not really...
Doesn't make any sense, but I think Commissioner Hare brings up a very good point that we need to tell the whole story. When we go in and say we're gonna decommission or to so many miles road, but just say we are making the improvements to these other roads, 117 miles of road, and they go, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that. So, I mean, we throw out the decommissioning part of it and obliterating or whatever you want to call it.
I know, it's kind of a hot button.
But I think we need to tell the whole story to the public because, you know, that would probably satisfy their interest. Say, oh, I didn't know you were making the road better going up there. Okay.
What is this land designation? You're not in the Calmeopsis?
No, this is, it's a mixture of matrix land, timber production land. There's riparian reserve. There is late successional reserve land, but it's also all overlain by critical habitat, which is a separate, you know, so it's kind of a mixture. So, you know, there are, in these units here, there are a number of stands that have been managed in the past, and, you know, we're including that in those, you know, clear cuts from the 60s that were... continue to do, you know, depending on what their state is, we're going to continue to do more work on those. So there is a mixture of stuff in here. You know, like I said, some of these, you know, strategic ridge lines were, you know, can be effective at keeping fire from moving large
going distances. Back to the old... The old cuts that you did, clear cut back in the 60s and 50s and whatnot. And then when those were those replanted at the time?
Yeah.
And when they replant, they overplant and then
with the expectation that we would go in and manage them.
And manage it thin at 40 years and then thin again at 70 years or 60 years. Is the fact that that is spotted owl habitat all of a sudden go, nope, I'm sorry.
No, it actually makes it easier. When we have stands that have been managed previously, it actually makes it less controversial as far as owls.
Right. But do you have a list of sales that you've done in the last 10 years where you've actually cut some of that and thinned it out?
It you know, really depends on when.
Up in 10 years from now that we can plan on a sale going in there to thin that out?
So we have, we maintain records, you know, sometimes... You know, maybe it was 1980 that was cut, and it's just not ready to be cut again.
Right.
So it just kind of depends on where it is on the time spectrum of when it happened.
Because in the harvest schedule, that's what affects our money coming back to the county, is how much is harvested off of that. But if all of a sudden it gets to, I know that down in, you know, the sycamore trees or whatever it is down there along I-5 where people planted those sycamore trees, and they were going to, okay, we're going to chop it all up and make wafer board out of it. They got up to, it's some of them are 80 foot, 100 foot tall, and all of a sudden they go, yep, we're going to harvest that all off. and sell it to the Wafer Board Company. They go, nope, that's now designated as old growth, and you can't cut it.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that.
I just don't want us to say, okay, we're going to let this, these
Well, that's the strategy on the BLM, is they're looking to get everything into the old growth section. If you look at their portfolio of O&C right now, over 50% of it is over 80 years old, and we haven't harvested hardly anything in the last 10 or 15 years. They're moving the whole portfolio to an old growth projective of the average stand age to take it out of management.
That's what I want to caution against.
That's the agency's goal. You can just feel it. To move the whole thing out
right,
of...
Right, eventually it'll all be old growth.
Yeah, and it'll all be late successional reserve is what they call it, LSR, which is basically a do not touch. It's a restoration. You can apply a CE to it for roadside hazard tree removal, but they occasionally do that. It's just really frustrating that there's not an objective to really, you know...
We will grow our way out of the timber industry.
Well, it's not trying to find the balance. It's moving to the other extreme from where we were in the 40s and 50s. And frankly, it'll go the other way. All of these people will be gone eventually, and there'll be a new perspective. It'll be a
tutorial
type of a government that'll say, no, we're going to go in there, we're going to harvest all these trees and blah, blah, blah.
Do you know you can build houses out of that stuff?
Well, it's crazy. Yeah. I mean, this is what societies have been doing for 2,000 years, and they can't find balance. That's the key.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the middle.
I don't want it to go back to the way it was in the 40s and 50s.
Well, applying this concept of restoration technology. Is, what are you restoring it to? There is no definition in FLTMA anywhere I've read of what is a restoration strategy restoring it to. It's this multi-story, diverse canopy, you know, that sort of deal, but is that really what the forest was looking like? I mean, I understand they're integrating these oak flat situations, whereas there were actually no conifers in there in the first place. Plus, the environment's changing, whereas Doug fir is probably not the dominant species that should be located in some of these forests. It's probably a pine species that should be located there. But we've been planting fir for 100 years in this area. It's really not exactly the right species that should be there.
And the market changes. Doug fir used to be the sought-after...
Pine was at a market.
Yeah.
There's no market for
good
right
studs,
now.
Close grain, boy, everything's working good. Does it warp, does it twist? And that's different now.
No.
The marketplace isn't willing to...
People are still looking for Doug fir.
Yeah.
They want the close grain, tight grain stuff for the CLT. They don't want the fast-growing north end of the state coastal stuff. It's not as structurally sound. Anyway, Mr. Pachorik, I had a couple of... I really appreciated Rob coming in here. Do you have a new director?
Rob retired at the end of January. We have an acting forest supervisor right now. His name's Scott Russell.
I don't know if I know Scott.
He just showed up in the past... 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
So there, his job is advertised.
Yeah.
Should be.
Well, at least you have a
next month or so. I'd
director.
Say. And then.
U.S. Forest Service director. We don't have.
Oh, sorry.
We don't have a BLM director. I meant Rob's position.
Okay. So Rob's position.
That helps, right?
So we have an acting in that, and their job is being flown. I predict they'll pick somebody in the next month or so.
Cool.
And then we'll have that person. So.
Do you guys have infrastructure on Onion Mountains?
Yes.
Towers and stuff?
We have a lookout tower. We have radio, weather station, radio communication.
Do you guys have a camera system up there?
No. I know you guys...
For fire?
No. But I know I've heard a rumor that...
ODF has approached us about co-locating on our tower.
Okay.
And my facilities communications guy has some reservations about that. One of the reasons I was trying to get up there... And just because I've never been up there to take a look at it.
Yeah, it's probably not a good...
It's fairly impassable.
Right, not right now. Because you wind around that north side there.
Yeah, that's where the snow's kind of been built up a little bit. So we're going to have to wait a little while. But I just wondered what kind of, like, your agency is not always easy to work with as far as, like, maybe having a generator facility that can facilitate, you know, off-grid style stuff for when the power's out, because the power goes out all the time.
I'm fairly certain we have a generator in it. System on our radio.
Yeah, I just don't know if we've, you know, worked cooperatively to say, hey, why are we putting in just one generator to fund all, you know, to provide power for all of this? And so if our infrastructure doesn't have the ability to support this camera system that they're looking to put up, ODF, I would much rather them not erect another tower. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
So they've not approached me as far as a proposal. So
I think we're easier to work with. That's why they've approached us. But it just
when we have an existing
How hard is that?
It's really not that hard,
right?
So
it's just a lease agreement or something.
It's not.
Like that.
It's not that difficult.
Okay.
Especially when there's infrastructure already.
I just want to look at alternatives. If we don't have our facility won't support it or something like that, that we have something else to do. Because I think cameras up there are really valuable. If we're going more and more to not having manned towers, let's get them robust cameras.
I don't see that being they haven't approached me, but I'm open to the idea.
That'd be great. Yeah. That'd be really
good. You still rent that out?
No, it's what happened was somebody stole all the lightning protection off it. So I'd really like to be able to rent that out because we have another lookout, Bowen lookout.
Is Peavine still up there?
Peavine is not on my district, I'm trying to think. But anyways, Bolt Lookout is really neat. It's book solid in the season it's open.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, people have a hard time getting into it.
Sure.
So I'd like to do that with Onion. I just need the money to
renovate it.
To renovate and get it to a spot where people are safe to use. So. And we've had, I think like you, we've had some vandalism problems up there.
Yes.
So,
you'd certainly want the lightning protection.
Yeah. So actually, having people up there renting is good.
Right.
Because it keeps the bad people.
The camera system might help too with vandalism, is what they were saying.
Yeah, I'm sure it would.
Tyler. Cool.
So I'm open to that. I just haven't seen anything from them.
Well, we just renewed your lease agreement, I think, for the Merlin Airport.
Okay. I didn't know. I know it was soon or.
Yeah, I think we did that. That was great.
Took care of it.
Anything we can do at the IV for you guys were talking about helicopter pads or something like that.
An IV?
Yeah.
I know we were talking about putting a new pad in at Merlin because one of them got taken out by the expansion.
Oh, okay.
I don't know where we're at. I've not heard anything recently about the IV.
No, this was a couple of years ago, but it certainly makes sense. I mean, you're using...
We use it all the time, yeah.
It every year, and it's that northern section over there of the runway. I know they're not cheap, but I like the idea that you're not stirring up a bunch of dust. And it's,
I think the helicopters like it too.
We're doing water transfers and stuff. I don't want to get it muddy. And you guys are having to wash everything down because of the Elysium problem out there and all that. It's just anything we can do to kind of get it in the queue.
Okay. I'll write that down. I'll have to get an update and see where we're at.
Erickson wanted to put a deal in out there, and they
were the best way we can.
Erickson wanted to put that pad in out there and do some testing and touch and goes and whatnot. Boy, the neighbors just scream. But if it's fire,
it's okay if it's fire.
Please,
I know it's
drain my pool.
It's extremely valuable to us because
it's
just a great location. I know California loves it too because a lot of times Happy Camp will be
right
smoked
there.
Out and they'll come up here and use it. So
it's a good spot.
Yeah.
Plus, it's a good size runway. I mean, you could.
Yeah.
And we're upgrading. We've got backup generator facilities, so the power will be there.
That's supposed to be hooked up. In fact, I think it was day before yesterday.
And
lighting
systems, and we're trying to make it.
New lighting systems really out there. We're working on a fire suppression system upgrade out there so we can start putting in more hangars. Ivy Airport's got a lot. They're in queue to do an awful lot out there.
Yeah.
That will make it more attractive to more entities, so. But it is on that end of the valley.
Yeah, anything else?
I'm trying to think what else. We had our public comment for the recreation fee proposal, the increase. So that will be coming up. I'm just trying to think what else. That was all I really had, so.
Okay. I don't know if I'll be able to attend that meeting. I feel as though I have a conflict. Honestly, one of my challenges, and I was going to mention this to Mr. McWhorter, is there were 15 positions on the RAC. There were 13 members that showed up, and you guys had 11 staff in the room, and you're telling me that you don't have $2,700 to remove a truck from the Checo River in that meeting. It feels, you know what I mean?
Wrong.
Really? You're inefficient. You have 11 people in this room to talk about, what you're doing, and then you're begging for $2,700. I can tell you, you've got $2,700 worth of staff sitting in this room. It's an example of inefficient management. That's not you, because I know that's the director. It wasn't good for me, who runs a government of 400 employees.
I'll pass that along. And I appreciate that.
It's just to the point where it's getting apparent.
Yeah,
it's getting to the point that's being obvious.
Inefficiency, and it's like, yeah. Our county at the brink, when I had to reduce 130 employees in a day, I could find $2,700 to get a truck out of the river if it was a priority. So that kind of stuff, and it goes to the fees. You know, that if you're looking for an increased fees, I'm like,
I certainly appreciate your perspective on the RAC. I can tell you on the fees. It's so part of what leads us to not having money in one account and having money in the other is, you know, how we get money. Congress tells us you will spend money on this and this and this. The good thing about the RAC fee is that goes into a separate account.
Right.
We have to spend 95% of that money on sites that we charge fees at. We don't have, like, it goes pretty much directly back to those sites. So in that case, the way it's set up is a good example of, you know, getting money in for a campground, and that money comes right back into that campground.
So one of the things I would recommend, and I've been the parks liaison to our park system for 8 years, and I'd say we went from a position 8 years ago of closing it down. We had considered seriously. It had a $300,000+ deficit for more than 3 years, which is a violation of general accepted accounting principles and Oregon budget law. And now they've got money, a reserve of almost $1 million for capital improvements, and they're making great strides. Your argument for increasing the fees from a public standpoint is that you're funded initially with public dollars. There are private campgrounds, private RV parks, all of that stuff. You need to stay competitive. It doesn't matter whether or not you need the money or not. You can't undermine the private sector for charging the fees that you shouldn't.
Yes,
philosophically, you should stay competitive. So it's almost not even a debate from a standpoint philosophically. Doing the evaluation of what the existing, what your competitors are doing is your rationale for charging a competitive rate. You shouldn't be undermining the private sector.
I totally agree.
Because otherwise, why would I go, you know, at the campground, Lone Mountain, or whatever down the street? I should be going not to you because you're half price and you're showcasing a public good of Big Pines or whatever else. Mm-hmm. You need to be charging a competitive rate. That's the single argument that resonates with me.
And that's what we've done.
Good.
In that we have that Josephine County campgrounds.
Right.
Private campgrounds, all the, you know, neighboring campgrounds,
right.
And okay, here's what people are charging for a similar.
That's what you should charge.
That's where we kind of tried to align that.
And I'm happy to push back on anybody who says different. That's not appropriate. The public entities are undermining the private sector. So
I totally agree with you. And we go, you know, outside of, you know, facilities, you know, when we have requests for special use permits and things like that.
Yes.
One of our you know, initial screening things is, does this has to happen on national forest land?
Right.
And if that need is being met off the forest, we won't issue a permit for that. Right. So that is.
That's good too.
We take that into account.
That makes sense. Great.
And you can leave those maps for us?
I'd be happy to leave these maps for you.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Matt.
That meeting's on April 19th. I don't have it on my schedule.
Okay.
I'll take care of this. Okay. Got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you again.
Let's set that tour up sometime. I'd really like to see those areas.
Okay.
You're about
May? Mayish?
Probably.
Because I know my April's pretty busy and just the
fine.
Weather.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking for this. So it'd be good.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
We've got, we're done with 1 and 3. We're back to item number 2, BCC. Do you have something we wanted to go over on BCC projects? We put this kind of off and on and off and on for quite a while.
We haven't done the goals.
We haven't done the goals or anything.
We need that list, the comprehensive deal, and
I think
that's really important to get that. We need a goal. We need a goal of having it done by the end of the week, end of the month.
Yeah.
and ready to go.
Let's make sure that next week we make sure this done before anybody attends that conference. I think that'd be a...
So you're following up on that?
And I'm going to follow up on that, yeah, today. Okay? So let's move BCC projects to a date to be determined.
Sure. You can work it out. That's
we'll figure that out. Number four, others. Do you have anything that we need to come forward?
I've got stuff to talk about. I'm frustrated in general. I think you can sense that with yesterday's workshop. We waste so much time describing the water, and we don't actually have... I don't know what it is, but that's what John was there for. His presentation should have been 15 minutes, not a half an hour. And there's no efficiency to what we're doing. Not we necessarily, but like even the city stuff. Asking the mayor to put together an agenda. Did you have an agenda? I didn't have an agenda. The council had one, but we didn't. And it wasn't delineated how much time. When I was the chair, what made me efficient, I thought, all of us, is that I would put on here, it's like, we're going to spend 40 minutes on SoReady updates and just trying to get the agenda item to 40 minutes. If we look at an agenda and we have 9 o'clock and then our next meeting's at 2, that doesn't mean we need to take 4 hours to get to, right. You know what I mean?
I was frustrated with yesterday because everything they had on their thing was all about the city. I mean, this is going to be a joint thing. It should have been joint. Everything should have been joint.
We came up with that agenda together when the city and came in here. We wanted to talk about
agenda build should happen district. Here.
Yeah.
Agenda build for that meeting should happen here.
Well, we did. We did the urban renewal district and the economic development thing. So I felt those were both city county issues. I wasn't frustrated by it just being city.
What we had yesterday, to me, what we had yesterday, I didn't do it. I've got it on the truck. But their list of projects, the only thing that even comes close to our fairgrounds system out there is a convention center. That's it. Other than that, there isn't anything that says...
they didn't have it specifically delineated. Laura said that it was the underutilized property, very general, generic, underutilized property.
Maybe that's where we want to leave it, because that would leave it wide open.
Well, and there was a fair amount of money in that. If you saw $500,000 and then $2 million, I mean...
Right.
And that's our money. I think my point... that just came to me. It was like, you want to know where you can change the value that you're getting right now?
Oh, yeah.
You're getting nothing off of that right now.
Yeah, you brought that up yesterday.
You put a hotel on there that's worth $20 million.
Yeah.
You go from zero to 20.
What is
like that?
And what does that do to your
generates
district?
Money.
To your thing, for all your projects.
Right.
We get nothing back out of that. So I think unmentioned projects or unmentioned properties and stuff. Maybe we want to just leave ourselves there.
I think it's fine. As long as we're able to... And that's movable.
I'm looking at to free up that land.
Yeah.
They could take money out of that urban renewal thing to build a new maintenance thing for the city and us.
I don't know that money can be used for that.
I don't know either.
But I don't think so.
We talked a little bit about the property out at, and this may be a good time to say, the property out there that is owned out at the industrial park that Dutch Brothers has. When Jennifer Wheatley was in the office the other day, I said something about, we'd really like to get rid of that out there. And I said, the city's really in the market to have a maintenance shop, a new maintenance facility. And I said, and then we've got out there by their Dutch Brothers property out there at ODOT.
Yeah.
And maybe we should start a big plan of saying, okay, we are all going to contract with a maintenance company to build something out. We have some land right beside yours on Dutch Brothers out there.
We're not using my dead body as long as I'm alive. Employment lands, that's the problem we have right now.
But we're looking at, she says, you know, there's a possibility that Dutch Brothers would do something along that line to facilitate something out there in that direction.
That's included in our plan with Mall Foster and a laundry to help find us a location. That's item number 3.
Yeah.
And There's a couple of properties. It's not rocket science. I mean, you need 15 acres. Mm-hmm. They're 5, city's 5, we're at 7, we could be on 5. Mm-hmm. We need 15 acres of non-priority tier 1.
In my mind, ODOT being out there where it is, complete waste of time and money.
It
plus,
is.
As Darren said, and I've said it 100 times, it's ugly coming into town.
It is.
Looks like we're a snow pile salesman, an old
right.
Storage yard for old asphalt.
So Moll Foster's going to find us that spot.
Okay,
they're
good. But I think Dutch Brothers was in. She said that they really don't have any plans for their property out there, and maybe we could be in on some kind of land swap somewhere. She said they're open. That land out there, they're not gonna build a plant out there.
I wouldn't mind buying it.
So it may come up for sale from her.
The problem with us owning property, Dan, you're gonna be here longer than me, is that when somebody comes to us and say, I've got 50 jobs, I've got 500 jobs, I want this for X, mm-hmm. boards will acquiesce and we will give it away. Mm-hmm. We will lose money on it when let the private sector own it. The problem with like the other argument, I'll always
well, the private sector owns it. We collect tax money off.
No. That's not. That's an important consideration, but that's not
the next.
Ward Ockenden will sit on it. I want $325 for it. Well, I'm offering you $315. Nope. I want $325. He's not considered. He has no. He doesn't care. It's not him. He doesn't care about the jobs that it creates, but that property. The other thing is he'll put whatever pencils. He's going to put. You know, 1,200 storage units. Do you know how many people employed at a storage unit facility? Maybe 2.
Yeah.
As opposed, you know, really? You've got 15 acres you're putting storage units on, and there's 2 people that property's employed?
I think he is intentionally making that ugly out there.
I don't know.
I think he's just intentionally going to make that a shadow out there so that we do something about it. Are we done?
We're still
talking about it.
The thing that I had is shared driveway approach. You and I need to say that we have, you're giving them until, I'm saying you, the end of the month. I want an order that facilitates a shared driveway approach element. We've got to start having what I come back to is an urgency in us thinking about every minute, everything we say needs to be getting to some sort of an end.
Okay.
We're all going to look back on our terms as we sat here and talked for 4 years, for 8 years.
We got it.
And we didn't move the ball down the field one iota. We are really good at describing the water, but what is that next thing? I was offended by John's presentation, and I will tell him at some point, I gave you a board directive. You are to change the median income level. Do you know how what was on your presentation?
No.
Changing the board makeup to having an administrator.
Yeah.
There were 4 things on there that were controversial. You didn't hear what I said? We'll disband the Economic Development Committee tomorrow if you're not picking up what we're putting down. You have to be looking at things nobody else is looking at. Don't look at transportation. We have 3 committees on transportation. The MPO, with the STAC, all RV Act.
Yep.
That is not your wheelhouse. That's not what you're charged. You can evaluate the system transportation improvement plan and say, boy, you didn't consider the fact that parking on either side of Merlin thing is really important to them. Okay, that's great because of businesses. That's what you're supposed to do. But it just seems really frustrating. Like,
yep. Well, it's the same thing. We've been doing it for a long time. It's the same people with the same, they just change the size of the grease board.
Yeah.
And they come up with the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And it was just like I talked to Susan Seawrider this morning. I said, you know what we want to do? I think that economic development, I said a little bit yesterday, we really need to focus and get one project done. So we take the airports.
Right.
We've got real exciting things going to Tiffford. We have the grants. We just need the match. So let's say the next 2 to 3 years we're going to finish for the airport. And then you tell Larry, you've got everything done. And guess what? Now our airport is going to be, you're done.
The city's going to match $50 for dollar, every dollar that the county puts in at economic development.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Economic Development Advisory Committee should say. That's it. And leave airports alone. They're fine. They don't need you. They need funding. Address the problem, mm-hmm. solve it, and
get
move
it.
On.
Get it on. We're done with that project. Now.
Can you imagine what that would do?
We'll pick another thing and say we're going to focus on that till it's done.
If we gave Larry $150 out of economic development, the city ponied up their economic development and matched it. Larry has $300,000 like that mm-hmm. to go for grants.
$3 million worth of grants. Done.
Done.
That's a solution.
Everybody benefits.
My frustration is just people walking around out here pay twice as much as me, not coming up with ideas, and we still continue to fund them.
Yeah. Stop it. Yeah, I want measurables, and we mentioned that yesterday. There is no measurables. There's no getting off point for any of those projects.
Well,
none.
Taking a great idea like what you have, your job here, you're not a counselor, you're a commissioner, mm-hmm. is outlining your sheet metal thing, or all of those ideas. The story's great. What do we do next? Mm-hmm. What's the step?
How do we
Who
implement?
Do we put in charge of making that happen?
How do we implement?
That has got to. How do we implement it?
Yeah.
We got to be better at telling the story that gets us to the point. But what is that next step?
And put it and put a timeline that says, okay, yeah, it was a good idea, or no, it didn't fly. We're done with it.
Yeah.
Don't mess any more time
exactly.
with it.
Exactly.
We're okay. We're done. Okay. Granted, I looked at it. We got it all figured out. It didn't work. Great. No big deal.
It's
carrier's
kind of like
not
this public
interested.
Public health RFP. I'm not sure we're better off, you know, today. We will be tomorrow if everything comes through with this RFP, with the oversight, the retained liability. What are we doing here? What do we actually benefit here? It's just that's key questions that we need to be strategically asking.
We're done with that. I had a deal over the weekend where we had a tree out in Merlin that fell over on a guy's fence.
Yeah.
And it was the people were getting, they became a tennis ball overnight. Yes, sir.
Excuse me, is this 157?
No, it's down the hall on the right-hand side.
Just past the opening to the rear.
You're real close.
Okay, thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
But all of a sudden, this guy became, and it was a paper street where it was supposed to be a street, never did, was paid a street. Oak tree right in the middle, it fell over and hit a guy's fence. And Friday afternoon, he became the tennis ball between legal... Public work, legal, back and forth. He called. I says, okay, just calm down. I said, let me get to the bottom of this. So I went over, I called Brandis, and he said, well, the guy said that he was going to lawyer up, so it immediately went to legal. So I went and talked to Pat, and she said, you don't have time to mess with this. And I said, neither do I. So I called Brandis on Monday morning, and I said, he said, well, you know, it's kind of a... If I go cut that tree up, it's going to kind of Marty Bauer to get his culvert in there. I mean, kind of the Marty Bauer. I said, no. I said, it's a tree and 2 hours of work for guys that are on salary anyway, and a couple of chainsaws.
Yeah.
Go over there and get the damn thing off the guy's fence. And I says, but it has nothing to do with the culvert at Marty Bauer's. Quit putting the two together. I don't deal with what ifs. I said, but what I do deal with is perception of county governor. Are we going to be helpful or are we going to be hindrance? Are we going to say it's not ours? Because if somebody would have called and said, I need to cut that oak tree down out there, and that you can't do that, that's on Josephine County land.
Right.
Well, it looks like it's going to fall over. Well, that's just too bad. Well, so what happened is yesterday I told Rob, I said, I'm done talking about it.
Yep.
Go cut the tree up and get it over with. I'll find out from legal if we did wrong next, but I get that tree out of the way.
Definitely.
So I got to call the guy this morning, and I said, I'm calling on that tree. And he goes, I just want to thank you. He said, the guy Kent that came out here, he said, the crew.
Nicest guy, probably.
Two or three guys. He said, man, they had the chainsaws. Yesterday afternoon, boy, they buzzed it all up. I'm sitting on the stump right now talking to you.
Nice.
And I said, and were you satisfied? He said, they mentioned to me that they really don't do this, but you know what? They're going to go over the top and do it. He felt like they went out of their way to help him.
Yeah.
And he says, ma'am, and he said, you tell Mr. Brandis, you know, thank you so much and everything else. And I said, I'll pass that along. Job well done.
That's huge.
And I said, how about the fence? And he said, no, we got the trees off the fence and everything. And Bill's over there now. He's thinking he can tip it back up and he'll be all right. He'll take care of the fence.
Okay. Done.
Done. Yes vote, no vote.
Can you handle, this brings up, all of those trees on I-5 heading north along those businesses in between I-5 and... Equipment Plus or whatever, all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
All of those trees are leaning over every building, every fence, and they drop junk and fall on the fence and everything else. They provide an opportunity for transients to get up, get on roofs. It's terrible. I've been asking Art for 7 years to do something about that. Cut a buffer. Get 10, 20 feet
back from that fence line.
From that fence line.
You need to maintain that for those businesses. It's outrageous. Yeah. They can't get in there and do it.
Okay. That's up there. That's up there where
affordable equipment starts. Affordable at the equipment top. Is it's all on
so it's
Highland
from the overpass down back down to the old golf course.
Yeah.
All
of that is just
good idea.
A disaster.
My shop was right in there. That's where I had my shop, and I never even thought about it because somebody could crawl up there, get on the roof, go through the skylight, and come back into the business. Okay. I got
a
couple things
for
Art Anderson.
I think we even wrote him a letter a couple years ago about that.
Okay.
Because affordable equipment, you get up there, and it just they dump leaves, and it's into the gutters, and it's just a disaster. They're falling on the buildings. What I was going to suggest we do is almost send a corrections crew up there or hire a tree contractor to do it and
send
then send them a bill. And if they didn't pay it, I'll go right up to Matthew Garrett, file a lawsuit.
Yep. There you go.
Get it done.
Okay. That's all I had. Do you have anything? I went out to the airport board last night at,
that's great.
At IV. One of the things that, and I don't know where they got this, but they're concerned. What is Larry Graves' official title? Is he the airport director or he is airport manager?
He's the director.
He's the director, okay.
We don't have managers anymore.
We don't have managers anymore. They're all directors. Good. That's what I thought it was. But I guess they need to change something on some of their whatever anyway. Director. Got it.
Yeah. You need to get
I met on Friday with Regional Solutions. In having to deal with the airports.
Yeah.
One of the things that Marta said is that we have to use Regional Solution dollars for infrastructure. And we said, such as IV airport and their fire suppression system. She goes, well, how much you have in there? She goes, and Julie was there. She says, we have $100,000 earmarked for that. And she said, Marta said, we can take that. You can take your $100,000 and use it elsewhere. So I think she's on board to do that. She was very helpful.
Problem with that, if we can't get a loan, that $100,000 won't come through for like a year or two. So hopefully, your next question is, can we get a business Oregon loan?
Yes.
Advance on that.
I think that's what we're looking at.
Good.
And another thing that was concerning to me, and it was concerning to Caleb LaPlante when it was there. I think he, Scott was there from the regional Josephine Jackson Klamath, the school's deal. What's his title?
Scott.
Anyway, so he was there, but he was talking about, a great idea on the Southern Oregon Aeronautics Academy area. We could move that to a White City, our White City campus. I don't think so. The key element behind that is that you are at an airport, a rural airport. I said, another one is we're going to put an element out at IV Airport to do the same thing, build a plane project out there. For the kids in IV that used to be able to graduate into timber industry as a job thing, now they have agriculture on not a really good front, but maybe this would open their eyes to the aviation side
of
it. And it's for Illinois Valley kids at Ivy High School. Their program would be at Ivy. They wouldn't have to traverse in here.
I don't know who Scott is, but...
But I think he was trying to move everything towards White City, and I discourage everybody, caution everybody against that.
They don't need any more help. White City's doing just fine.
Yeah. Everything doesn't need to go to Medford like it always does. So.
Especially not things that can go other places. I would really appreciate it if White City could look at that and say, you know what? There are certain businesses that have to be in White City because of their footprint and what they need. But those that don't, we should look 50 years down the road about what is this going
to
look like.
Well, he wanted
They're
to buy.
They're going to be in the same position Grants Pass is of, you're in a bowl. You can't go anywhere else.
Yep. And he said, Scott said, he says, well, our organization almost looked like buying Costco because we're right across from the airport and that'd be a perfect spot we could build. I says, but it's a commercial airport. As you'll never be able to get, I says, the key here out of Tacoma is at the end of the work day, at the end of the school day, they say, you know what, we've got a couple hours of daylight, let's go up.
Right.
Let's go up. And they get in the golf cart,
take the
trail over, jump in the instructor's plane, and let's go fly for a little bit. Keep that kid fired up.
Real fun.
So anyway, if that's it, we're done.
Yeah.
We are adjourned at 11:09. I'm shutting the recorder off.